What we know through research is that patterns like helplessness, hopelessness, stress, shame, trauma, and so forth, they impair the functioning. They weigh heavy on the way that our immune system function. Thus, they render us more vulnerable to disease agents and carcinogenics. So in a way, when I work with cancer patients, I don't work to cure the cancer, but rather the aim of the work is to kind of lift that weight, to awaken and revive the innate capacity of the immune system to actually do its job, what it's designed to do. It's just a different approach, right? A lot of people, or what most people are familiar with, are bodily interventions, either through the medical or through the natural health, such as nutrition, supplements, and so forth. And those are important, but they're only part of the equation. Times are related is your currency.
Oh, you can spend it how you like. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Eat Green, Make Green podcast. This is Pat McCauley, as always. If it is your first time tuning in, thanks very much for being here. I appreciate it. I hope you enjoy it. It's Easter Monday today as I'm recording this, and I hope everybody had an awesome Easter Sunday, if that's something you celebrate. Obviously, for those of us that do celebrate, it was a weird one. I certainly didn't go to my family's house like I generally do each year. You know, didn't see the parents for safety and all that. But we got our Zoom calls in, we got our phone calls in, and and I think the next time that I'm able to get together with family, I'm just going to appreciate it that much more, which is kind of a beautiful thing when you think about it. But anyway, I hope everybody enjoyed their weekends as best they could with all that's going on, and I, as I have been each week, just wish everybody safety, health, peace, and all the best during this obviously very strange time. This week's guest, I am fired up for this one because it's a topic that I just love and have gotten more and more into. This week's guest is Avinoam Lerner, and we happen to connect within the past couple weeks. We're both in a similar Facebook group and just happen to connect because we're both in Boston here. But Avinoam is a renowned mind-body interventionist, and he specializes primarily in cancer and addiction recovery. And he's just so knowledgeable on how our subconscious impacts our body's ability to heal, essentially. So we talk about how seeing a grieving woman as a child shaped his life path, why most Western medicine approaches don't address the person at their core, how our childhood experiences shape the narratives we tell ourselves, how our subconscious mind and programs impact our health and wellness, why he thinks meditation sucks, which was super interesting, why he uses hypnotherapy to access and reprogram the subconscious mind, why we have to transcend the Newtonian and mechanistic view of illness, you know, X in equals X out, why there is not one size fits all for healing, why his particular method is intended to let people spend less time in therapy and more time living their lives, why how we go through each day is a choice, and why a great place to start for a lot of people is just to recognize and acknowledge the dominant thoughts we have each day. This is just awesome, right? I mean, we can eat as good as we want, we can exercise as much as we can, we can really do all the right things, right? We can eat a perfect whole food plant-based diet, we can go to the gym every day, we can move every day. But if we have these programs running in the background, if you will, in our subconscious, right? Whether that's from a, you know, childhood experience that was traumatic for you, or the time you failed in front of all your classmates as a kid, or whatever it is, these things that have happened over the course of our life that maybe deep down make us feel worthless or make us feel not whole or not loved, those impact our health and the aspects of our body that are kind of on autopilot, right? Like digestion, like the immune system, right? All the parts that we don't have to tell to work, well, those subconscious programs that we have, whether we know it or not, are impacting our body's ability to perform those functions. So, and obviously, you know, when those functions are not working properly, that can lead to disease. And that's why he specializes in cancer, in addiction, and a lot of these things that are the underlying cause of those diseases. So this is just super, super powerful stuff from really a true expert that's been doing this, you know, 30 plus years. So I encourage you to get the notebooks out for this one, and to have an open mind and just really drink this all in, because I think this is a message that people need to hear. And, you know, I think so many of us have these programs, myself included, that are running in the background that do not serve us. So this is beautiful. I encourage you to follow Avi Noam's work. I'll leave all links to the show notes. Share with loved ones, share with everybody, because this is great stuff. So without further ado, the one and only Avi Noam Lerner. Times are related is your currency. Okay, well, Avi Noam, welcome and thanks for coming on. And just to give people a little background, we just sort of serendipitously connected recently. We're in a similar Facebook group, and I watched your TED Talk and did some digging. And I just love what you're up to and the work you do. I find it super interesting and something people, I think, really deserve to know about and have access to. And I thought this would be an amazing conversation to come on and get your story. So I'm glad we connected.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here and hopefully reach more minds, more people, right? I mean, that's what it's all about.
Absolutely. So I think a good place to start, we chatted a little bit about your background and things like that, but I'd like to kind of start out with understanding where you came from and why you sort of chose this direction, and how you found this line of work and whatnot. So you can take it back all the way to childhood if you want. You can, however you want to paint the picture, please do.
Sure, absolutely. Well, first, it's in an attempt to define what it is that I do, I call myself a mind-body interventionist. I'm a holistic therapist of sort, but what it really means is that I work with trauma, and more specifically, I help people that live with severe or significant trauma. I help them prevent it from taking effect or hold of their body in the form of limitations, illness, such as cancer, for example, and behaviors such as addiction and so forth. So it's trauma-based addiction, trauma-based illness, working at the root cause of people's experiences. And one way to do that, which is somewhat different from conventional therapy, is to address the part of our mind we call the subconscious mind. And we can get a little bit deeper down the rabbit hole, further down the road. But over the past 20 years that I've been in practice, I worked almost exclusively with people struggling with autoimmune disorders, with cancer and other of that family. And, you know, you want to go down the rabbit hole. I started with cancer because when I was a kid, when I was 6 years old, it might give my age a little bit. I was 6 years old and I grew up in Israel. Israel is an area or region with many different conflicts. And when I was 6 years old, one of these wars broke out. And as a 6 year old, I didn't know what the hell was going on. I just saw a great amount of distress. And I lived in a small community. And as kids, we would kind of walk down with the women of the community down to the gate to welcome the men that came back from the war. And most of them did. But some did not. And one specific event is burned into my mind as a moment where I came face to face with a breakdown, a level of sorrow and agony that I couldn't even wrap my head around it when one of the men didn't return. And I saw his wife just falling apart, breaking down and wailing. And I didn't know what to do. I wasn't sure what I was feeling. I just felt this overwhelming urge to really reach out and soothe. And there was something about the way that she looked, look in her eyes, that really touched me very, very deeply. So fast forward some 20 odd years later, because I've traveled for many years. You know, we in Israel, we joined the army, and then we spent a few years in the army. On the other end of it, many people just go and travel, and I've done that. I spent many years traveling around the world and trying to put a name or an identity to what it is that I was experiencing and feeling. So I touched upon many different spiritual practices, spent some time in monasteries and ashrams and so forth, but realized at the end of this that I'm neither a Buddhist or a Hindu, or I figured out that I'm not that. There's something else. So I came back home and studied formally for a degree in holistic health. But what was interesting, and the reason I share that, is because my internship revolved around two very specific groups of people with unique emotional needs. One was Holocaust survivors. The other one was terminal cancer patients. And what was really striking for me, working with these terminal cancer patients, the look in their eyes was the exact same look in the eyes of that woman all those years ago who broke down. And that was the look of loss. And it's a terrible kind of look. It's something that I couldn't shake, but clicked right there because I saw it in their eyes. And it made sense right there and then for me to put all of my skills and abilities into trying to help and support these people and the community. And so that was almost 20 years ago. And since then, I was very fortunate to touch many, many, many lives and be a part of their journey and support them. And that doesn't mean that everyone is still with us. Some people are no longer here, but it meant something and still very much does mean a lot to me to be able to give them a level of hope and help them override some of the challenges, the struggles that are embedded in the journey back into health, if that makes sense. So,
yeah, I would love to, that was a perfect introduction. I'd love to get into kind of how you, maybe the typical, or if you want to give an example, the typical person that comes to you for help, and sort of the actual mechanisms you use to help them.
Sure. So the people that come to see me recognize that there's more to their health crisis, more to the cancer than just what can be measured or cut out or radiated or operated on. So there's more to their experience than just what's going on in their body. They recognize that they are a part of the solution. They're part of the process. And they want to take ownership and responsibility. They want to be proactive or more engaged in their recovery journey. And These are people that are driven. They know that, the visible crisis is in their body, but there's an invisible crisis that is taking place within. And they want to make sure, because they somehow intuitively understand that the mind, which is the non-physical part of who we are, not to be confused with the brain, which is the organ in our skull, but the mind and the body are an integrated system. So it's profoundly important to affect change on the physical level, on the level of the body, but it also is just as profound and important to take care of the person within the body, because what essentially medical treatment is designed to do is to address the physical. So people are treated, or I should say their body is treated, but they themselves feel untouched, unchanged, or intact. And somehow on an intuitive level, we know that if we'll continue to think and feel and believe everything that we used to think, feel, and believe as before, you know, we'll just repeat the environment, the conditioning, it's the same kind of ground upon which the same kind of fruit will grow, and they want to do something about it.
So the average person that comes to you is somebody that already has kind of an openness to something, a little more deeper, if you will. You know, it's somebody that understands the power of past life experiences and the mind and the way they think daily and things like that. Yeah.
I'm very grounded in a field of study called psychoneuroimmunology. I stay away from past life regressions from all of those things that cannot be measured. My practice is very grounded and is more closely related to, I would say, traditional medicine rather than alternative medicine, mainly because of the amount of research that is involved. So I would say that they come to me because they usually have gone the medical route. They usually have gone to therapy or talk therapy as such, social workers, psychologists, and sometimes even psychiatrists, but they still feel that this inner core of who they are, the place that no scalpel can cut deep enough to get to and no amount of radiation or chemotherapy can penetrate, that place has not been treated, has not been altered, has not been changed. And talk therapy doesn't do that because it's revolving, you know, it's going around and around and around. It's not designed to penetrate. It enhances your skills of observation, which is important, but it's not penetrating. And so they find a way, they look for a way to penetrate, and that's usually when they find
it. Gotcha. Yeah, and I didn't mean like previous life experiences. I meant like, experiences from childhood and things like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the mechanism, in a nutshell, is based on the fact that the mind, with its two components, the conscious and subconscious mind, knows everything there is to know about you. Mainly, we focus on the part we call the subconscious mind because it's the part of our mind that regulates many of our bodily functions, like our bodily temperature. We don't think about it. Our heartbeat, we're not thinking about it. Digestion, we're not thinking about it. It's all happening, or the operating system is beneath the surface, and it's usually the subconscious mind that governs these bodily function. It's also the part of the mind that governs immune function or intervene with the immune function. And that's when it becomes really important for anyone who's dealing with autoimmune disorders, such as cancer, for example, where the body or the immune system turns against itself.
So how do you sort of reprogram things? What is the actual tools you use to do that?
So the main tool that I work with to access the subconscious mind is hypnotherapy. And hypnotherapy is just a very practical way to bypass the security system, the conscious mind, if you will, and get into the vault, right? I tell people all the time, different people use different analogies for the conscious and subconscious mind, but essentially think of a guard standing in front of the vault in a bank. The guard can take information back and forth. It doesn't have the gold. The gold is in the vault. So he lets, if you've got the right password, if your information matches what's already in there, you can get through. But if your password is incorrect, it will kick you out. And so we want to make sure that the guard is set to the side a little bit so that we will have access, free access, to all the information. And then we basically change information regard to who we are and what we know about ourselves to be true. We address the belief systems, the building blocks of our understanding of who we are, so that we can change what certain things have meant and mean to us today, so that we can change the way they affect us today. This big word that I mentioned earlier, psychoneuroimmunology, essentially is a field of study that ties in certain mental and psychological patterns to the functioning of our immune system. More specifically, it relates to stress, but stress, of course, it's a big umbrella for a variety of different things, right? Stress for one person will be different from another. Essentially, what we know through research is that patterns like helplessness, hopelessness, stress, shame, trauma, and so forth, they impair the functioning, they weigh heavy on the way that our immune system function, thus they render us more vulnerable to disease agents and carcinogenics. So in a way, when I work with cancer patients, I don't work to cure the cancer, but rather the aim of the work is to kind of lift that weight, to awaken and revive the innate capacity of the immune system to actually do its job, what it's designed to do, which is it's to eliminate any abnormalities in the blood. It's just a different approach, right? A lot of people, or what most people are familiar with, are bodily interventions, either through the medical or through the natural health, such as nutrition, supplements, and so forth. And those are important, but they're only part of the equation. I think essentially what might be helpful is to, listeners to kind of transcend the Newtonian and mechanistic view of illness or any kind of experience that we have, to transcend the mechanistic view of X equal Y, cause and effect as such. We are multidimensional beings. We have the physical vessel that we live in called the body, but we also have these mental and emotional and spiritual realms where we exist. And so by only applying the remedy through either medicine or nutrition or supplements, when we only apply the remedy to part of the healing equation, we only get partial results. That's the bottom line. So it behooves, it's to our benefit to ensure that while our medical team and natural health providers do everything in their power to support us through this process, it's essential that we'll take some responsibility or ownership and really move forward in supporting ourselves. So that's done through the mind. It's just a different way of doing that.
Yeah. So I guess to sort of put this, if people aren't like fully following, basically, right, to give kind of like an example. So the example you gave as a kid, that traumatic experience of seeing, somebody else lose their loved one right in front of you, essentially. So, and we kind of have all these experiences over the years, especially I think as kids is probably a very impactful time. And say we had this experience where we were really embarrassed or felt worthless for some reason. And essentially those experiences, whether we know it or not, stick with us as the years go by, and kind of the program operating in the background, if you will, in the subconscious, the stuff you're talking about, that's just kind of operating without us having to think about it is operating impaired, if you will, because of those past experiences.
Correct.
And so, we carry that, as you use, we carry that weight without really even understanding that we are, in a sense. Yeah?
Absolutely. Think about, you know, we're in Boston, right? And we love baseball. So I use a baseball analogy. Think of watching a baseball game through a hole in a fence. You only see a certain part of the field, right? Your field of vision is limited. So you can't see what's happening before and after or on either side of your field of vision. So you're going to make up a story of what happened. And that's usually what happens to us during childhood. Because our mental and emotional and psychological capacities were not yet fully formed, and still we had to survive, we made up pieces of the story to fit the narrative so that we can continue and thrive and grow and become independent. Some of these stories is very helpful and very supportive and it drives us forward, but some of it is just completely false and limiting. So over the many years of our lives, think about collecting raindrops in a barrel outside your home. One drop, two drops, 1,000 drops is fine. But when you have that barrel out there for many, many years, essentially it will overflow, which is in a way likened to a health crisis of sort or some sort of crisis that we're dealing with. And so because we don't have if you break your arm, you have an X-ray machine that shows you where the fracture is, but we don't have an X-ray for the mind that shows us where the wounds are. And so how would we pay attention to them? We pay attention because the mind will eventually utilize the body to convey that we need to pay attention to something. We need to set things in order, or we need to correct some of the erroneous and false perceptions that we have acquired. And you're right. Every time there is a significant event, we can call it trauma, but any significant event where our self-concept has changed, right? Every time somebody waved their finger at you and said to you, you shouldn't have done that. And if this is a person of authority, that's a difficult moment for us. It's a moment where we learn that what we have done is causing them pain. And of course, everything we do in life is to get more love or compensate for the lack of love. So we want to get more love. So we are going to try and improve or disown certain parts of ourselves. And in the process, we are kind of buying into a new narrative that may not be authentic. So illness in general, from my perspective, is a call for us to begin to live more authentically and begin to align ourselves with our true core values. And we have to figure out what they are. Most of the time, as human beings, we're lazy. We couldn't care less. But all that changes when crisis is upon us, when we are physically shut down, limited, confined, and then we have to kind of focus inward rather than outward.
Yeah, so it's your work, a lot of it is letting or somehow getting people to a place where they're able to reframe those narratives or kind of let go of the stories that stories of the past or stories they tell themselves and reframe their perspective of them.
Correct. Yep. Coming to a new decision about the meaning of events is the very essence of it because it changes everything. It changes everything. Even if it's changing the narrative in 1 degree over the long run or the long course of our lives, that 1 degree is extremely meaningful and will set you on a different path.
Mm. Yeah, and I've mentioned each time we've spoken about Joe Dispenza, and I think just a lot of people know him, and I talk about that type of stuff on the show quite a bit, just because I'm interested in it. And his mechanism, or I don't know if mechanism is the right word, but he teaches meditation to kind of get by the vault door, if you will, into the quantum. I think he calls it the quantum, to surpass the door into the quantum, and then you're in a place that you can create from, and you get to kind of create the narratives from that place. Your tactic is not really making the person do that work as much. And you explained why you like hypnosis better to get there. If I'm butchering all of that, please step in. But your tool is hypnosis. His tool is teaching people to meditate to get to that place so that they can start to change the stories and narratives and come from a place where there are, you know, infinite possibilities and infinite realities, if you will. So can you talk a little bit about kind of your approach on the hypnosis side?
Sure. So, you know, to be very blunt, I think meditation sucks.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that very lovingly. I meditate myself, but I'm acknowledging the fact that every time we set the intention consciously to tend to something that is beneath the surface, we're at very high risk of failing, of setting ourselves up for failure, essentially, because we come against the conditioning process, which defines what we know about ourselves. So there's nothing wrong with the theory. It's just the reason I chose hypnotherapy as a practice or as a therapeutic vehicle is because it bypasses, it's a very practical and pragmatic way to override the innate resistance that we have to change. And we have an innate resistance to change because the subconscious mind perceives any change as a threat. So, you know, this is no different if I told you that the sky is actually bright green. Now, most of us have learned that the sky is blue, or, you know, at sunset, various shade of pink and purple, but bright green doesn't register right. And so no matter how long you're going to meditate upon it, because you have learned this, and that's what the mind holds on to, meditation is not necessarily the vehicle to penetrate the vault's door. So what we need to do, practical, pragmatic, and kind of very easy way to do that is to use this tool we call hypnotherapy. It's just a very practical way to do that. It's not that what he does or what he offers or speaks about is wrong. It's profoundly right. But theory, I think, or information doesn't necessarily lead to transformation. Mm. And the risk with meditation is that when we sit down to do or achieve these goals, if we're not disciplined enough, if we're not educated enough, if we are not able to achieve what we have set out to do, it backfires. And that's a thing I mentioned to you. I think that's the problem with the self-help movement in general, positive thinking more specifically. That's because meditation in its essence, which is the practice of going within, for a lot of people suggests that meditation means being still, right? Doing nothing. But because we are wired differently in the West and our brain is jumping from one tree to another like a monkey, very quickly, in a matter of a few seconds, we're going to face some difficulty and challenges. So the bottom line is that when we are not able even to do the simplest thing, which is doing nothing, being still, it may suggest to us that something about us or within us is broken or defected. And obviously that's not what Joe Dispenza intends for us, but it's what a lot of people have come to me and says, listen, I've been trying to meditate for years and it doesn't work. I get angry, I get upset, and then I don't do it. And then I don't want to fail again and again and again. I need help getting around that. So, you know, hypnotherapy, there are many ways to the top of the mountain. I mentioned to you, I don't think that one path is right for everyone. There isn't a silver bullet because people are complex. We are complex. And mine is just very structured, very grounded, very methodical. It has a very defined beginning, middle, and end. It's measurable. We know where we are along the path all the time. And there's no mystery. There's no mysticism here. It's just a very pragmatic way to get from A to Z in the shortest possible time.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it's kind of like, right, it's kind of like in my world, telling somebody to eat healthy, right? And, you know, they followed one day and they followed 2 days. And then the third day, you know, they go off the rails for whatever reason. And they start beating themselves up, right? And they think less of themselves because, you know, I was able to follow it, but, you know, they weren't, and what's wrong with them? And it's kind of this compounding effect, which is probably similar to why, you know, they haven't been eating well in the first place.
Exactly. And now you just, you know, you just help them deepen the belief that they are not even able to do the simplest thing, which is to do what's good for them. So what does that mean? Does that mean I don't like myself? Does that mean that I don't want to be healthy? Does that mean that I don't want to lose weight? What does that mean? Essentially, we are reliving the wound, the original wound or the original wounding that had taken place during the childhood when we felt insufficient, not something enough, not whatever enough. And that's the challenge. So I say, why get stuck in the process? Why not eliminate the suffering period, or why extend the suffering period beyond what you need? Here is a very pragmatic way to get to where you want to, or at least as close to where you want to, in a very short period of time. And there's no side effects to it. There's no downside to it. There's no, with everything medical, we know through research that we can impact the quality of one's experience. We can ensure that surgery goes smoother. We know that recovery is faster. They spend less time, you know, fewer days in the hospital. We know that there's no overdose on medication when we address pain and so forth, or physical discomfort. We know that because the mind through the brain is the best pharmacist, is the, you know, everything is provided in the right dose, in the right time, in the perfect kind of way. So why not utilize this brilliant capacity that all of us have, which is to engage this innate capacity, and why not harness it to our benefit?
That's beautiful. And I love the word you used, broken, and it's something I encourage people to think about, and just coming at whatever it is in your life, understanding that, you know, and specifically for me, health, that there's nothing broken. And if you can just understand that, you know, your body and it knows how to heal, it has all the tools, you know, it is the best healer on the planet, and it's how well you can get out of the way and let it heal itself, and understanding that there is just, there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing broken. You know, you just have to find out how to let the body do what it wants to do, essentially, is kind of how I frame it.
Correct. And, you know, the other part of my work with cancer, I think I mentioned to you that I also work with addictions. A great deal of suffering is, and addiction is a terrible, terrible infliction. And again, trauma-based addiction is all resulting from this distorted view of who we are. Both in cancer and addiction, most of the suffering stems from reflecting upon our experience and what we're going through, rather than actually dealing with the symptoms or with the actual moment-to-moment that we live through. And so this suffering, when we essentially kind of try to strip down suffering into its building blocks, we have two main drivers. One of them is perception, right? More specifically, we perceive a situation to be dangerous, difficult, or painful. I'm talking about cancer patients right now. When they talk about going through treatment, they perceive the situation to be dangerous, difficult, and painful. So that's about perception. But the other part is that it's all about belief, and they don't believe they have the resource, the inner resources to cope. So beliefs and perceptions are aspects of the mind. And as such, we have the control, or we can affect change. And so that's essentially why I call myself an interventionist, because your body and your mind knows exactly everything there is to know about how to help you heal and move forward and become whole again. My job is to kind of intervene in a very precise kind of way, through precision, and help you change the meaning or address those the underlying motivation for either the perception or the belief. And once it's done, it's done.
Yeah, and we know this to be true in a scientific sense because of the placebo effect, right? We know when we tell ourselves that we're giving our body something to heal itself, that, you know, that just the fact that we told ourselves that, there's a reaction, a positive reaction in our body.
Exactly.
So interesting, yeah.
And so you can think of hypnosis as the intentional activation of the placebo effect.
Okay.
So, you know, you can try you can try to activate that in various other ways, but it's not, I think we're lacking as people. The number one mistake I see people do is that they try to address what's beneath the surface on their own. And the reason, I mean, that's just intended to fail to begin with, because by definition, it's beneath the surface. We don't have the capacity on our own to kind of address what's beneath the surface. If we did, it would be lovely, but it's just out of reach. And so we need help doing that. For a lot of people, unfortunately, reaching out for help, seeking support, it's not something that comes very easy to us. It's something that suggests to us that we are, again, perhaps not sufficient on some level, that we're not really able and capable or good enough to do this on our own. And so it breeds shame, it breeds more suffering. Eventually, when our back is against the wall, we are finally able to say, you know what, the hell with it. I've got nothing to lose, everything to gain and nothing to lose.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. I'd love to get your perspective on kind of what your thoughts are when people say, because we live in this world where, you know, we spend however many billions a year, you know, trying to find cures for all this stuff and drugs for all this stuff. And that's just sort of the accepted path. And I think our consciousness is expanding, but most people still believe that these things come out of nowhere and there's nothing you can do. And they're just these unfortunate events that, you know, one in three, you know, men will die of heart disease and cancers and all this stuff. And what is kind of your perception on when, or your thoughts on when people say sort of what you talk about is kind of this woo-woo bullshit, you know, stuff, right? Because we live in this world that just thinks the stuff we're talking about right now is just like, it's just not real. I got cancer, man. I need chemo, you know? I'd just love to get your thoughts on kind of the world we live in.
Well, the world we live in buys into the premise that what you see with your eyes is all there is to it.
Mm.
That's kind of, I think more and more people recognize the falsehood of that premise. And you know, if that's someone's view of the world, then there's nothing that I can say that will help them see things differently. I mentioned to you that if you believe that medicine is a wonderful thing and a blissful thing, and that's the only authority, then you will submit yourself to treatment. But that will simply ensure, and that's important. The treatment is important. Thank God we live in this day and age where modern medicine provides us with so many powerful solutions. That's a blessing that I think we should all acknowledge. At the same time, it's limited, right? As I mentioned before, it only applies the remedy to one level of our experience, and such we get only partial results. But I think if someone is completely oblivious or fully bought into the premise of the Newtonian science, then this will not make a lot of sense to them. As such, they will harness, you know, they put themselves into the medical machine, and that's all that they can do. I have tremendous compassion to people that just can see beyond, and I think they're missing a lot. But it's not necessarily my job to, you know, I think we have to be realistic about what's possible. And then you have the other side, which is also on the extreme, that have a certain disdain medicine and everything that it stands for, and goes everything natural. And I also think that's a bit extreme. I think life happens in the middle. I think there is a way to benefit from all worlds. And I think our job as practitioners, my job specifically as a practitioner, is to try to bridge between those worlds, to help the people that I get to work with, help them understand how they can take the best from all worlds and put it to work to their benefit, just get the most out of it. I don't believe that everybody, that one particular practice or way has the right solution. And, you know, I worked at Dana-Farber, which is Dana-Farber Cancer Institute here in Boston, mm-hmm. which is a significant institution. And one of the main discussions or complaints, I should say, that I was on the receiving end of from oncologists was the notion that my kind of work give people false hope. And I usually answer that with the statement that false hope can only exist where you provide false guarantee. Right? I approach my clients with tremendous amount of respect. I'm not selling anything. I'm just saying here is something that can certainly work. And you know, if we talk about false hope, medicine, if you just buy into that premise, can be false hope, because it's not a written and done story. What we know today will look like the Stone Age a year from now, right? So I think we need to acknowledge that we all have something to offer, and it's the combined effort or the ability to take from the best from all worlds that will improve people's chances for recovery, for quality of life, and to help them just get back into living.
Mm. Yeah, so you've been doing this 20 plus years, so obviously you know the power of it. You know, for many people, it works. It's transformative. So if you would, can you give maybe one or two examples or testimonials, if you will, of kind of profound changes you've seen in people over the years?
Absolutely. Both in the cancer world and in the addiction world. And what might be helpful to understand is that the way that I work is the format of my practice is somewhat different. So I ask people to keep in mind this kind of program, this package of 15 hours. So my sessions are an hour and a half on the base of an hour and a half. So 10 of those will amount to 15 hours. So what I've done is I've taken half of that time. So the first 7.5 hours, I've taken and condensed into one day. So basically, it's an intensive day. It's a day where we work for 7.5 straight hours, and we go very, very deep down the rabbit hole. Through that day, we get a tremendous amount of transformation. We get to address some of the underlying motivation, if not all of it, and exhaust it and resolve it in such a way that the person on the other end of it comes out and feel incredibly transformed, like almost reborn in a way, not because this is the greatest practice, but because there is an accumulative component here of work. There is a where else will you spend this amount of time on yourself on such a deep level? So this in and of itself promote it's just an experience like you've never had before.
And
so with the cancer, yeah.
Yeah, and you're basically, when you say go down the rabbit hole, you're really trying to get a picture of kind of what that person's life experience has been, essentially.
So we address a whole host of those particular moments, those moments where their self-concept was changed. So a lot, we clear a great amount of mental ground, a great deal of trauma, and we essentially adjust or assign new meaning to all of these events. And if you believe that things were one way and it impacted you and limited your experience, when you no longer believe those limitations, you are free in many different ways on a very deep level to believe whatever you want to believe now. So, you know, for example, with cancer, if you believe that treatment is dangerous, difficult, or painful, if you come out on the other end of that day believing that treatment is actually helpful, supportive, and meaningful, it's reviving your immune system, you're going to be much more resilient, much more able to deal with whatever comes your way in the best kind of mindset possible. And we know through research that when you enter any kind of procedure in the right state of mind, there are fewer complications. There's a faster healing rate. Everything works better.
Mm.
So that's with the cancer. Overall, when on the other end of these 15 hours, you are able to not only withstand everything that comes your way better or cope with it better or process it better, but you're able to be proactive and initiate certain rituals, certain things that you do through the day that sustain your mindset and your body's resilience. You're flying high in that respect. So I have people that I worked with many years ago that were given all sorts of grim predictions about their future. They're still very much here with us. With addictions, trauma-based addiction, again, when you free yourself of the distortion, when you stop kind of cut off the need to blame yourself, to punish yourself, to hurt yourself because of something that you believe that you've done or contributed to or was a part of, when you no longer have that need, the opposite of that need is freedom. And so you no longer need. And I've had people that were just coming off the physical part of the detox. In other words, they were coming out of rehab places. And, in rehab, you certainly address the physical. I mean, you cut, you find replacements, ways to deal with the cravings. And instead of drugs, you get medication. And you do some therapy as such. But again, this core of pain inside of you is still intact. And so when we break through that pain, when we transform that those beliefs that have caused that are fueling the pain or driving the behavior, when we can resolve them, you have the freedom. So now not only you have the physical support through the rehab centers and through the medication that you take, but now you have the freedom to begin and see and experience yourself differently. And that's the ultimate. Because people, if people get out of rehab and then they sent home and there's no transformation of that core, they will eventually find themselves back through the revolving doors, either of the hospital or the rehab center.
Mm. So you would say first half, I think you said 7 hours, right? First half is the deep dive into you know, all the past experiences and reframing all of them. And then that in itself has a profound effect, as you said. And then on top of that, you're taking hypnosis and really getting in there. Is that kind of the next step?
Well, the first day initiates change in attitude, a great degree of change in attitude. And you really do feel like you have grown wings and you can fly. But what we know through research again, and this time research in the field of positive psychology, is that when you have a change in attitude, but there's no correlating change in behavior, then oftentimes over the long run, people will tend to kind of go back to the threshold, and we want to prevent that. So the first 7.5 hours, it's all about changing attitude. The next 7.5 hours, which usually go 3 hours, 3 hour session, and another hour and a half. In those following sessions, we do a great deal of testing. We're testing the triggers and making sure that they are diffused, that they're no longer have the power to affect you. And we also acquire certain tools, certain practices or rituals that will help sustain a change in behavior in a profound kind of way. So you're getting the full effect of the process.
And what are some of those habits and rituals, out of curiosity?
So most of them are familiar ones, like something that I'm really big on is gratitude, right? So gratitude, everybody knows about gratitude. However, so I think a lot of these practices people know about on the surface level. So a lot of people, for example, when they think about a gratitude, they know that, for example, if they thought about three things that they're gratitude today or things, three good things that happened to them today, and they point them out, that would be fantastic. But it's not just that. It's how to do that. For example, with gratitude, you become like a connoisseur. So you find those moments that are worthy of acknowledgement, and then you open them up and you dip your whole self into them. You expand on them. You breathe them in. You begin to acknowledge what was it about that that really nourished you, that really was worth your attention. You expand on that moment. It's not just a blip. It becomes a long moment. And you're not only doing it for everything that is working and worthwhile or worth acknowledging, you're also doing it for everything that isn't, or everything that worked wrong. In other words, everything that you failed or didn't work as according to plan. Why? Because energetically, when you acknowledge everything that hasn't worked yet, when you are able to express gratitude toward acknowledging that, recognizing that, seeing that, you prevent it from growing even further into a real mishap. So there's a way to practice gratitude in an aware kind of way that is much more nourishing, that provides you much more of that sense of nourishment that we deserve. Gratitude is one of them. There are a few others that just follow the sequence, and shadow work is something that I'm that I tend to focus very deeply on. Shadow work comes from Jungian psychology, basically relates to all those past events and moments in times where we've disowned certain parts of the self. So how do we begin to integrate them back into who we are so that we can be that person, be a better kind of self? There's all kind of very quick or practical meditations, or even a lot of people know about EFT, the tapping, right? I mean, it's just there's a lot of different tools that anyone can put to work today that will affect change today. And I think the greatest privilege that I have, and the reason I'm so grounded and methodical, is because over the many years, I mean, I spent years traveling and I've seen a lot of, I have zero tolerance for anything that is fluffy or woo-woo, or when people start talking to me about chakras, I get purple and I steam from within because we just, in the same way that people talk about meditation, because, you know, I've been at it for almost 20 years, even longer, it's just on my personal journey. I've never, when people talk about chakras, when people don't talk about things they themselves have experienced, that they have firsthand knowledge of, that aggravates the hell out of me. And so I've been there, I've done that. I bought the t-shirt and I like, you know, a different outfit. I realized that I'm not any of those other things. I am who I am. That's where I think the blessing comes from. And so it's just a very practical, very pragmatic way to sift through tremendous amount of practices and types of practices, and finding out those practices that actually work and can affect change in real time. We don't have time. You know, in Israel, we live life by the second hand of the clock, meaning we might not get to the end of the day because, you know, there were a lot of periods of time where you just get on the bus might explode. You don't know. So my point is to spend as little time as possible in therapy and more time living your life, which is why this intensive format, which is why this demanding protocol, which is why we're getting results.
Yeah, beautiful. And you made me think of just a practical sort of, I guess you could call it a gratitude practice of sorts, but just every, as you go through the day, you know, being able to perceive everything that happens as something that is happening perfectly for you, instead of to you, and just even if it's the worst possible thing, you know, your plane's delayed 4 hours, and instead of being pissed off and upset, it's like, wow, you know, what is this extra 4 hours giving me the opportunity to do? Or, you know, somebody in the family's in the hospital and it's a dire situation, and you can focus on all that, or you can say, wow, you know, I just hugged my entire family for the first time in 10 years because of this experience. And you can shift everything to just a state of, wow, this is beautiful. And yeah, that you made me think of kind of that when you were talking about gratitude.
We live in a universe of a world of duality, right? There's nothing is completely black, or nothing is completely white. Nothing is completely evil. Nothing is completely good. There's always all the elements are present at all time, and it's a choice. What do you want to pay attention to? We got plenty stuff to be afraid of, plenty stuff to be stressed about, plenty stuff to suffer, you know, for. We also have plenty stuff to be grateful for. And so it's, where do you want to park your attention today? What kind of a day or experience or moment do you want to have? And if it's a tense moment, then there's plenty to focus on. If it's a calm and soothing one, if it's an intimate one, how can I cultivate that right now? Because the next moment will just basically follow this one. So it's very likely that if right here and right now, I'm parking my attention on everything that is worthy and worthwhile and beautiful and lovely, if I can do this now, the next moment is likely to be in the proximity of that. And that's all that matters. Now, you know, again, from a practical standpoint, not every moment, it's not that we can live up with our heads in the clouds. It's not about that. It's about finding moments as we go through the day that we can give more power to, so that we can, at the end of the day, know that we were balanced. We found a way to balance the different forces, different elements. You want to go alchemical, it's how much fire. You know, fire, it's a very interesting element because we all have fire inside of us. It hits our bodies, right? But if it's too low, it's not enough heat. If it's too high, we become brittle, right? And fragile. We just have to find the right temperature for us, and how much we want to spend our day in intensity, how much we want to spend our day in calm, how much we want to spend our day contemplating things that are of high value or high spiritual nature, and how much time we want to spend descending into the soul of who we are. I mean, there's just so many different ways to look at the day. It's a choice.
It's a choice. I love it. I love it. I'm curious. We're getting a little over an hour. Are you okay on time? If we go a little longer?
I'm okay. Yep.
Awesome. I'm curious to get your thoughts on, you obviously don't think in a Newtonian way. So something that's, you know, super trendy right now is the idea of manifestation and, you know, creating your, or impacting your future reality based on your thoughts and your state of being. How do you perceive that? Do you feel that you are in control of your future in a sense? And you're able to manifest things in your life and synchronicities and all that is a real thing for you? Could you maybe dive into your perspective on that?
Sure. I take a step back practicing a great deal of humility in, there are moments through the day where I feel that I'm in the mix, in the that I'm weaving the threads of the future. But to say that I'm there for the most part, no. I have kids. There are moments where I'm as far as possible from anything manifesting. It's not about being aware all the time. I think part of the challenge for the law of attraction and all of those things is that people sit down to tune in, so to speak, to that frequency. 5, 10 minutes, 15 hours, 15 minutes, even an hour, let's say an hour a day. What is your state of mind in the rest of the 23 hours?
Mm.
Right? So I think it's just, if we're setting ourselves up for failure again, not taking into consideration the human factor, the fact that we are, that our brain think through associations, and it takes just one domino to, one little something in our lives, in a day, in a moment, to cascade everything, to collapse all the beautiful castles we build in the skies. It's just, let's be realistic. It's a practice. We have to be disciplined about it. We have to put time and effort into it. It needs to be a guiding attitude that we have. And the more we need to practice, right? So the more we can do it, the more we can be in those moments, the more that we will see it at work. I think, again, in theory, it's all wonderful, but in practice, there are very, very, there's a handful of people that I know that actually I can say are as close to that as possible. We're all manifesting all the time. And it's true, everything you can see in your mind's eye can become your reality, but you need to hold it there. You need to focus your attention on it. You need to nourish it. It's like a seed you plant in the ground. There are billions of seed planted every day in the ground, but by nature itself, not all of them turn into they're not all blossoming. Why? Because you need the right conditions. So if you take a seed and you put it in the ground, but you don't give it water, it will not sprout. And so it needs water. It needs the right temperature, the right moisture. I mean, it needs all these conditions over a long period of time. So we do know, because we can look around and we see some humongous trees. We know it's possible. We just need to, I think, be realistic about it and take ownership and responsibility and not beat ourselves up for not being able to manifest winning the lottery or the love of our life or whatever it is that we're trying to win. It's the journey, the process, marrying into a new mindset that will get you there. And if we can kind of disassociate or remove ourselves from the terrible desire for immediate gratification, we might even get there.
I love that. I love that. Is there any, wisdom or piece of advice or anything you want to say to somebody maybe that is listening, that is they're dealing with poor health or low self-worth or anything like that, they're not in a good place. If you could just give them kind of one nugget or whatever you'd like to say to them right now.
Sure. I think what we can all do, at least it will be the first step in this journey, is to begin to pay attention to what I call our sponsoring thoughts. Sponsoring thoughts are basically dominant thoughts, thoughts that keep coming up again and again and again. And when we pay attention, when we can write them down, and we can begin to see patterns, and we can begin to cultivate a strategy to changing these patterns. But I think for many people, they just it's too chaotic. They're not sure how to put themselves in order. And paying attention to the sponsoring thoughts and seeing their patterns at play would be a very good place to start. Very practical, again, very pragmatic. And then when they identify some of these patterns, they can decide what kind of action they want to take. If they feel that they can do it on their own, that's great. But I tell people all the time, it takes, I wouldn't recommend to anyone to do this work on their own. Why, you know, in the same way that I don't cut my own hair because I can't see what's happening in the back. And I'm going to, you know, there's people that's what they do. Not necessarily me, but there are people around us, talented people, skillful people. But you need to, you know, it all starts with a little willingness to change things for the better and paying attention to the sponsoring thoughts. Our sponsoring thoughts, our dominant thoughts, is a very practical way to begin to do that.
Fantastic. That's great advice. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we wrap up?
No, I'm excited that there are ways to reach more people, that people like yourself and others are out there and promoting the word. And you know, we're all doing what we can to make this world a better place and make life a little more bearable. That's all we can ask for.
Right? Absolutely. So where can people follow you, reach out, social media, et cetera?
Sure. If people Google my name, which is Abinoam Leonel, and you can put in the description of the podcast, they'll find I'm my presence is there. But abinoamleonel.com is mainly the cancer website, and rapidaddictionsolution.com is mainly the work that I do around addiction. And I work with so many variety of it's not just addiction and cancer. I work anything from infertility to PTSD to IBS to, you name it. Anywhere where people can't really or have not been getting the results they desire through either the conventional routes or medical routes, there is a possibility that there's a reason why they didn't, and we can find that out. Your mind knows everything, or their mind knows everything there is to know about. It's not about analyzing, not about speculating. It's about finding the truth as your mind perceives it, and that's where we stopped.
Beautiful. You got me thinking again there. I could ask 100 more questions, but thank you. I just want to say before we sign off, I just really love what you're doing. I can sense that you come from just a very, very good place, and the knowledge you have needs to be shared, and it's powerful stuff. And I've certainly, kind of the work I've done on myself as best I can, and just the different way I perceive things in my life has had a profound effect for me. And even going deeper and working with somebody like you, I'm sure is just a whole nother level. So I just give you a shout out. I think what you're doing is beautiful, and helping people, and the world is better off for having you. So thank you. And I'll leave all links to you in the show notes, and I hope some people reach out. And you are local to Boston, so hopefully when all of this ends in the world, you know, we can meet for a coffee and people can start meeting again and hopefully
meet with you. See what happens on the other way. I think the greatest help that we will need is in learning how to be together again. How to be together again? What does it even mean? I went out today and I was surprised at how startled I was to see my neighbor. I was surprised at how startled I was to see my neighbor. I hear them all the time. It's just to see them. It was just, oh, yeah. So it's, yeah. Anytime.
Yeah.
I would love to have them.
Well, thank you very much again.
You're welcome, Pat. Thanks. Take care.